Can I firstly introduce Martin Dolan, who's our new CEO. He'll do the introductions and then over to me.
Good morning. I'm Martin Dolan, the Chief Commissioner of the Australian Transport Safety Bureau. And we're here because today we're releasing our preliminary factual report into a collision between a Hong Kong bulk carrier, the Silver Yang, and the Australian registered single-handed yacht, the Pink Lady, which occurred off Point Lookout, Queensland, on the 9th of September this year. But before we go into that, I thought it might be useful if we just gave you a little bit of a background on the Australian Transport Safety Bureau, what we do and why we're involved in this particular incident. We're a no-fault accident and incident investigator, and the law says our job is to find out what happened with a focus on improvement in safety. So we're not in the business of finding out who's in the right and who's in the wrong, and that's something I would encourage you to bear in mind as we release various reports over time. Our job covers all aviation in Australia and some rail and some maritime, particularly that that involves international ships and ships in interstate trade. So our interest in the collision between Alice Pink Lady and the Silver Yang came out of the fact that the Silver Yang, a Chinese freighter, was involved. Our process of investigation essentially goes through three steps. The establishment of the facts, and at that stage we prepare, which you have in front of you now, a preliminary factual report, then an analysis of those facts and the determination as to whether there are any safety issues that need to be pursued. And those safety issues and how they are dealt with through recommendations and working with a whole range of people is the focus of what we're about. So that's the context for it. What you have now in front of you is our preliminary factual report, and that is limited to preliminary factual information on the collision. There's always the possibility that new information will come to light, and as the analysis goes on, our conclusions will become firmer. Obviously subject to ongoing work, and there will be a further report within the next few months. I'd like to now hand over to Mr. Peter Foley, who is our Director of Surface Transport Safety, and he will take you through the report, where it's going to, and after that we're happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thanks, Martin. What I'll do for you is just briefly take the circumstances of the report, some of the facts surrounding it, and then I'll talk about our directions, where we're going with the investigation, what we've done as a part of the investigation to brief the skipper and indeed her support crew on what we've found to date in terms of preliminary safety issues, so that they can take the appropriate or have taken the appropriate actions before they're actually set out on the voyage. At about 0:51 local time on 9 September 2009, about 15 nautical miles east of Point Lookout on North Stradbroke Island, the Australian registered single-handed yacht Ella's Pink Lady collided with the 63,800 tonne Hong Kong registered bulk carrier Silver Yang. At the time of the collision, Silver Yang was northbound en route to a port in northern China. She loaded a cargo of coal, and Ella's Pink Lady was heading southeast en route to Sydney via Lord Howe Island and making good about a speed of about 7 knots. The ship was doing about 9 knots northbound. The weather conditions and visibility at the time were good. And in the time leading up to the collision, about 26 minutes beforehand, Silver Yang's bridge watchkeeper had actually identified Ella's Pink Lady, had seen one green light to port at a range of about 4 miles. He continued to monitor the vessel's position in relation to his own in order to assess the risk of a collision. About 5 minutes before the collision, the skipper of the yacht had checked her radar and noted that there was a vessel about 6 miles off her starboard quarter, almost right astern. She could not see it visually, but she monitored its progress on radar for about 1 minute. Once she had determined that it was not presenting a risk of a collision, she set the radar guard rings that are alarm clocks and went to bed for a nap. However, the ship she was observing was not the Silver Yang, which was now about 1 mile to the south-southeast of her position and on a collision course. About 3 minutes before the collision, Sylvie Yang's bridge watchkeeper altered the ship's heading by about 10 degrees to starboard and then almost immediately applied hard to starboard rudder about 30 seconds before the collision in an attempt to avoid Ellis Pink Lady. However, his efforts were unsuccessful and Ellis Pink Lady's bow collided with Sylvie Yang's port side around about the midsection. The collision woke Ellis Pink Lady's skipper. She climbed out of the cabin, grabbed the tiller and tried to steer the yacht. She looked upwards and thought that it was likely that the yacht's rigging would become entangled with the ship, and so she went back down below to avoid the risk of being struck by the mast if it became dismasted. A few seconds later, the mast did come crashing down. Ellis Pink Lady contacted Sylvie Yang on VHF Channel 16, which is the international distress channel on VHF, and over a series of short conversations with the ship's watchkeeper, he confirmed that neither the yacht nor its crew nor the skipper needed any assistance, and so the ship sailed on. The conversations were a little bit difficult as the ship's bridge watchkeeper's English wasn't very good. He was a Chinese second mate. Ellis Pink Lady's skipper used the yacht satellite telephone to call her parents. She spoke to her father and told him what had happened. And while she was talking to her father, her mother rang the Rescue Coordination Centre at ANSTA to report that a collision had occurred. RCC then telephoned Ellis Pink Lady directly to confirm what assistance the skipper required. She confirmed that she was fine. The yacht was seaworthy and that when she had had the mast and rigging on board, which was overboard at the time, and appropriately tied down, she'd motored towards Southport, Queensland. The RCC reported the incident to the Queensland Water Police, and both the RCC and the police continued to monitor Ella's Pink Lady's progress until she made Southport. She was met by a water police launch while she was still en route. The ATSB's investigation commenced that same day. We sent two investigators to Southport to interview the skipper of Ellis Pink Lady, her family and support team. We also gathered evidence from Queensland authorities. That area was within the coverage of Brisbane Special Traffic Services, so there was radar coverage. And we also collected further information from the Australian Maritime Safety Authority. The ship was headed out of area. And consequently we haven't as yet been able to interview the crew of the ship, but what we did in the very early stages is contact the Hong Kong Marine Department, who are the flag of registration of that vessel, and ask them to obtain evidence for us. They have now provided statements from the ship's crew, various documents, and most importantly for us, the ship's voyage data recorder. Now this is the ship's black box. That evidence is now being analysed. It was received last week and it will be obviously analysed, and anything that we find will feed into our final report. During the investigation process, we've identified a number of safety issues and in preparation of this preliminary report, a draft copy of the report was hand-delivered to Ellis Pink Lady's skipper on the 9th of October. But our investigators also provided a comprehensive face-to-face briefing to the skipper and her support team on the issues that were found to date. And we arranged for her to visit a tanker that was berthed in Sydney so that she could see, from the ship's perspective, what the challenges that face a bridge watchkeeper on board a ship, so she can understand the risks associated with and the limitations of what a ship's watchkeeper can do in this sort of situation. On 15 October, we advised further some issues in relation to her, some limitations in relation to her automatic identification system, which is a system that ships use to identify other vessels in the area. And we are now confident that all matters, all relevant matters in relation to the investigation to date have been brought to the attention of Ellis Pink Lady's skipper, her support team, in a timely way, to assist their risk management and preparation for the voyage, which obviously she set off subsequently. The investigation continues and a final report is planned for release in approximately 6 months. And in the event that we identify any further safety issues, we're in contact with the support crews, we're in contact with her, and they will take the appropriate steps we expect to mitigate any of the risks associated with safety issues that we may identify during the subsequent investigation process. Ongoing activities include we're looking at the electronic detectability of the yacht, the lookout being kept on board both vessels, the adherence to the international regulations for the prevention of collisions at sea, which is the COLREG, the collision risk assessment, the actions taken following the collision, and the human factors issues associated with the incident as well. The COLREGs are the rules of the road by which every vessel at sea must operate, and it requires that both vessels in a potential collision situation must take appropriate steps to avoid the collision. So there's an onus on both vessels at all times, if they assess that there's a risk of collision, to avoid that collision or take steps to avoid the collision. If a collision does occur, it means that there's almost always contributing safety factors on the part of both vessels. Concerning for us is this collision highlights our ongoing concerns about collisions involving trading ships and smaller vessels with about 35 investigations of these types of collisions conducted by the ATSB and its predecessors since 1990. Of most concern is about 20 times the ship did not stop and render assistance or make contact to make sure the smaller vessel was proceeding safely and that its crew were safe. That didn't happen in this case. But we're very concerned about the issue of collisions and in particular that issue where ships fail to stop and render assistance. We've taken a number of actions and we've done quite a lot of work actively both within Australia and internationally to address the issues that we've found in these types of collisions. Our focus is on a rigorous, objective investigation which leads to the best possible safety outcomes to address the issues that we've found with this collision, but also other collisions of like type. That's pretty much it for the preamble, so if you want to start some questions, we'll take some questions.
Is there any concern from the ATSB that the Silver Yang has done more to render assistance in this case, or are you satisfied that you did enough?
In the circumstances they make contact, they discuss whether or not Ellis and Lady Skip had required assistance, and indeed Jessica indicated that she didn't. So in this case it was the appropriate action. So we're not concerned that Sylvie Yang did the wrong thing by sailing on. Indeed they took what steps were necessary to ascertain the safety of the crew of Ellis and Lady.
You said that Jessica identified a vessel which she thought was the Sylvie Yang, but it wasn't.
Well, there was several ships in the air at the time, and if I can draw your attention to the preliminary report, there's a picture on page 3 which indicates that there was actually 4 vessels in the area at the time, and it's our understanding at this point that it was probably Empress Heaven that she identified, and at that time, when indeed it was Silver Yang ahead of her that was presenting the risk of collision.
Can you just send out the radar system that
she's
and whether or not
she's got a very well-equipped vessel, and the radar system, no. We're not concerned about the adequacy of the radar vessel. Our investigators had a long discussion with Jessica and her support team about the equipment and the fact that all of these items or equipment are aids to navigation. They don't obviate the need to have a lookout and actually do what you would normally do, which is to maintain an appropriate lookout.
The steps that
you understood
Jessica
asked
after the
permission,
you think had those things undertaken before she prevented this from happening?
Potentially, it's very hard to say. I guess one of the reasons why we do what we do is to identify the safety issues and to promulgate the issues, not just for Jessica and indeed her support team, but for everyone who sails all Australian seafarers and all seafarers in Australian waters.
Can you
There are a number of issues in relation to the equipment she had on board and the use of the equipment. There were some things that we felt would help or enhance the ability of her vessel to be detected by ships, and there were some suggestions made to that end. A radar reflector, for example, which has now been fitted. We also talked about issues in relation to fatigue and fatigue management and some suggestions there, but I think that had already been canvassed before by the Maritime Safety Queensland report. But most importantly, we took her down to a ship to give her the perspective of a bridge watch keeper on a ship so she can understand some of the limitations associated with operating a ship and indeed the equipment on board the ship.
And you think that's important advice for all
Absolutely, and indeed, when we produce the final report, there'll be some good lessons in there for everybody.
Do you think she was
unprepared when she did that? I don't know that you can make that sort of value judgment based on what we know at this point. Once again, we'll analyse all the facts. It'll be in the final report. With the preliminary factual, all we aim to do is present the facts as we know them at that point.
But she is better prepared now.
Presumably, yes, they've taken actions to address the safety issues, and with respect to avoiding a collision with a trading vessel at sea, yes, she is better prepared.
You are very focused on the facts of your being just to assist our journalists. I wonder if you could perhaps tell us what you think are the most salient or interesting facts that this document adds to the public record, that you add to the public record today that we haven't had prior to that.
What I think has been aired in the press to date has been probably some findings and preliminary findings from Maritime Safety Queensland. Certainly there's mostly agreement within our report, but in essence there's a point of difference about what she saw at the time, which is reasonably important. But the most salient issues are the things that we've identified to assist her and assist her risk assessment for the voyage and indeed avoiding this sort of collision in the future. The findings that come out in the final report will obviously be shed more light on exactly what we've found to date, but it's too early to tell. Collisions involve two parties. When we prepared this report, we had one side of the story. We now have the other side of the story and we're analysing that.
On the
we would have preferred to have spoken to the crew ourselves. That's our normal process. No, the language issue is not a particular issue for us. In this circumstance, no. The message was passed. It was passed with perhaps it took a little longer than would normally have been the case, but no, the appropriate message and it was passed and received.
Why didn't Sylvia show up in Jessica's radar? Why did she
It probably was on her radar, but when she set the guard rings, which are rings that you set on the radar, an alarm when a vessel passes or a target passes through the guard rings, the ship was actually inside the guard rings when she set them. So the radar, or that function of the radar, wasn't working for her as it should have at the time. It was probably an error of observation. In this instance, once again, the focus needs to be on both vessels at the time, and indeed Jessica was showing the appropriate lights for a sailing vessel underway, and there was also an onus on the watchkeeper on board that ship to avoid her.
When you spoke about the fatigue issues, what kind of things have you that with her about that? I mean, obviously,
it's very difficult for a single-handed sailor, as you can appreciate, to manage fatigue, and they need to think carefully about how they do that before they set out on a voyage. We have reasonable experience but good contact in the fatigue management world, particularly the Sleep Research Centre in South Australia, and we referred Jessica and her support team to the Sleep Research Centre to provide some guidance, if you will, in the preparation of a plan.
Was that another area that you say she might not have been as well prepared for, but now she
probably is? I think they've given it a great deal of thought, but once again it's something that it's very difficult to know how your regime is going to work before you actually try it out. So I guess every bit of assistance you can get in preparing your management regime is worthwhile.
Was it compulsory that she contact the research center, or was that what she was actually doing?
No, it was just a suggestion. It wasn't a recommendation.
You talked about your concern about fish sheets and inclusions of small vessels. Are there changes for the end of the
year? Is there anything more that can be done? Look, the biggest concern we have, and we've run awareness programs for commercial fishermen in the past, and we have an ongoing program where we're trying to make Australian fishermen aware of the risks of collision with trading ships in our waters. But the biggest concern we have is when the trading ship sails on and doesn't stop to ensure that the people on the fishing vessel are safe. We're addressing that. I attended a meeting of an international meeting of marine crash investigators from around the world last week. Australia has raised the issue in very strong terms, and we will pursue it until we get some result.
Would Ellis
Sinclair
be lucky that
the
still remained
in Kennedy? Could it have been a lot worse? The collision at the time was pretty much square on. So the Ellis Sinclair struck the port side of the ship at almost right angles, so I don't think it could have been much worse, really. In terms of the angle of attack, it would be very difficult. I've never yet come across a head-on situation. Generally, the bow wave on a ship will actually cause a smaller vessel to move off down the side. So the damage sustained by Ellis Sinclair was, in the circumstance, quite moderate. It wasn't very severe at all.
Seems like through the angle of the collision, by the way, is this more Ellis Sinclair's fault?
We don't talk about fault, but in essence, and the assumption you make in the first part of your question is a big one. So I suggest you wait for the final report where we discuss exactly what action should have been taken by both vessels.
So I'm another
debater.
Could Jessica have reset her radar anyway to translate that
would have detected the Sylvia? Potentially, yes, but your first... Once again, radar is a navigation aid. Your first and best defence is to look out. Electronic means are excellent. There's no doubt you can detect vessels much further away than you can with by the naked eye, particularly at night or even at night, but they shouldn't replace the need to actually maintain a proper lookout. And indeed, that's what the coal rigs say. Almost every one of these collisions could have been prevented. There's, in fact, every one that we've investigated could have been prevented by the actions of one or both parties. Are we done? Yes, well, absolutely, and we have maintained constant contact to date, and as we've had issues arise, we've been very proactive in making sure that they're aware of the issues and the progress of the investigation. So yes, we'll continue to maintain close contact. If we find anything further, we'll notify a support team who will in turn advise Jessica appropriately.
And do you have any concerns about the fact that Jessica has left
on
the stand before
the report? No, because she was well aware of the contents of the report and the safety issues contained within the report and not within the report. The other things that we've identified as preliminary safety issues, if you will, well before she left and in good time to make the appropriate steps to mitigate the risk. I guess our focus must be on what we've got in this collision. The risks associated with the voyage have been long considered by her and her support team, and the decision as to whether or not she continues with the voyage is one for her and indeed her parents and support team. So we must focus on what we've found in our investigation today. Well, we've done so with respect to the collision. So the issues that we've found today, we've advised her of, and indeed she's taken the appropriate steps to mitigate the risk. As I said, once again, the decision whether or not to undertake the voyage must be hers. She's the only one who can assess the risk of her situation at that place at that time, and indeed the way she feels about undertaking it. So it must be a decision for her in consultation with her.
Would you agree she's likely to survive and she's now better prepared?
I don't think there's any suggestion that she was in real danger when she collided with the ship. It could have been obviously much worse. but lucky to survive is a long stretch. I think she's certainly better prepared as a result with respect to avoiding a collision with a trading vessel.
And in relation to the
we haven't suggested anything specific. What we've suggested is that she has a fatigue management plan in place and that she takes expert advice if necessary. Thank you very much. I think that concludes.